everyone. Welcome to another episode of Divi Nation. Divi Nation is a podcast and video show by Elegant Themes, the creators of Divi, the ultimate WordPress theme and visual page builder. The goal of Divi Nation is really simple. We want to provide you with the knowledge, insights, and supportive community that you need to be successful with WordPress and Divi. I'm your host, Nathan B. Weller, and as your host, it's my job to facilitate that success by having various guests from the Divi and wider WordPress community onto the show to share their stories and experiences with you. In this episode, I interview our very own Augustine Mack. If you're at all familiar with our blog, our Facebook page, or especially our YouTube channel, then Mack's face is one that you're used to seeing. Mack is our resident video tutorial specialist, and he's not only got a lot of experience with WordPress and Divi, but using video to promote your business and or products and services. So during our chat, we not only get to know Mack a little bit better as a person, but he also shares his audio, video gear and software recommendations, production tips for video and audio content, as well as content discovery tips for YouTube. We get into all that and more in today's episode of Divi Nation. Here it is. Mack, welcome to Divi Nation.
Hello, and thanks for having me. Finally.
Yes. Yeah. It's funny. We did that short little interview to welcome you to the community when you first came on. And I think that was actually before I started doing, making a point of interviewing everybody in the company who wanted to, or was able to get interviewed. And because of that, it's just been, I just woke up one day and I was like, I haven't had Mack as a guest on the show. How is that even possible? You're on video every day for Elegant Themes and you haven't been on our podcast. It's crazy.
So I know. At one point I thought maybe, you know, you just want to be on the, you just want me to be on the video. Now I'm just playing.
Oh boy. I didn't.
Nah, but yeah, it's cool.
Well, I'm glad that we finally worked it out so you can come on now and we can talk about your story, and hopefully here during the course of our conversation, encourage people in the community, whether it's for their personal business, for their clients, or for their products, to create really high quality videos and just let them know that it's possible. So that's something that I think you're a great example of, and I hope we can kind of share some of that knowledge with our community.
Yeah, cool. I'm happy to discuss that.
Awesome. Sure. Well, first, you know, we have a few questions or a kind of a format that we like to follow. And one of the things I like to ask people when I remember to do it is, what is a day in the life like for you? I mean, we all work remotely. Most of the people in our community are freelance, but not everybody. But the vast majority, even of those who work for other companies like yourself, like me, they're remote workers. So they still have a very unique approach to their day. To the way they do what they do. So if you would, maybe walk us through what you do on a day-to-day basis.
Yeah, sure. My day starts off with a commute of about 45 minutes because I live outside. I used to work from my bedroom, but then now I decided to work from the office. So I've got my studio here. So it takes me about 45 minutes to travel from home to the studio.
And you're in Birmingham, just to let people know, right?
Yeah.
Birmingham, UK.
Birmingham, UK. Absolutely. Yeah. So 45-minute commute. And then the first thing I do when I come in is check my YouTube comments, because that's one thing I'm curious about, because when I do a video, I'm just thinking, okay, so what are the responses like? Are there any questions? Mm-hmm. So that's the first thing I do when I come in. And then after I do that, the day obviously before, I make a list of videos that I need to do so that I know ahead of time what I'll be doing, because if I don't do that, then I start panicking, because obviously you know what exactly is coming up without planning it the day before. So I normally plan everything the day before, then I do my commute, check my comments, my messages, and then, you know, I start planning my video. So it's pretty much as simple as that.
Oh, wow. Nice. Yeah. So for those who don't know, I mean, you're doing your pace for an average week is like a video a day, more or less. I mean, it doesn't always work out to that, but that's kind of over the long haul. Your average is probably about a video a day or a video per day and a half. So it's a pretty quick clip for the kind of high quality stuff that we're trying to put out.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. It's a video a day. Now, this obviously in the beginning, it was quite challenging because trying to get, you know, the video to look good, the sound to look good, the editing all in one day. Mm-hmm. I mean, it was a bit difficult, but now, because I've sort of like managed to put a workflow together, which mm-hmm. makes things easier. I mean, a bit of automation as well. So it's been easier now to create that video a day. As compared to before. Yeah.
Definitely. Well, we did a bit of an interview when you first came on, like I said earlier, where we kind of introduced you to the community and you gave some of your backstory. And I'd love to revisit that briefly here before we jump into our topic that I mentioned earlier. Tell us a bit about, so we know that you're on Elegant Themes team now and you're doing about a video a day. You're growing our YouTube channel like it's full of weeds. It's sprouting everywhere. It's doing great.
Thanks.
Tell us about what you did before and how, you know, this, you know, your current situation came about.
Yeah, sure. I mean, the story is a bit long, so you have to bear with me there.
Okay. That's fine.
Right. So, in school, throughout, you know, my primary and high school education, I've always been very, very good at art. So that's sort of like, I mean, anything creative was really like my cup of tea. So after my high school, my goal was, and I was adamant, that I wanted to be an architect.
Oh, wow.
So things didn't work out well. My dad was redundant. And because I come from a big family, you know, five boys and one sister. Mm. It was, the funds had to be diverted because I'm the firstborn in my family to the rest of the kids.
Oh, wow.
So that was a point where I had to decide what I had to do next. So this was around the time of the dot-com boom where, you know, it was all about, you know, computers, networking. That was a big deal. So I did is I went into IT. I started studying to be a Microsoft certified engineer. So I did the course. Now, finished all that, then I thought, okay, for me to be more competitive, I need to be a network engineer. So I did the Cisco course, the CCNA. So I went into networking.
Oh, wow.
Now, yeah, so I worked for about a year doing networking, but it wasn't really a good move for me because I did it for the money and the work was stressful and there was mm-hmm. nothing creative about it.
Yeah.
So that's when I sort of like sat down and thought about, okay, I really need to do something creative. So that's when I started discovering, you know, things like Photoshop, and I used to buy magazines a lot to really learn the software. So I was reading
I remember those days where if you wanted to learn software, you didn't go to a blog, you didn't go to the documentation, you got magazine subscriptions. I remember that. Oh, I did the same thing. And it's so weird to think of now, but that's literally what you used to do. You go into like a Barnes and Noble and there'd be a big thing of big wall of magazines. And it'd be like, the computer graphics, the Photoshop, the Illustrator, Spock. Sorry. I had to revisit that moment.
Yeah, it was crazy. So I had piles and piles of books. So I started learning Photoshop, and then I started learning, web design, because there was I forgot the name of the magazine now, but it was all to do with HTML and CSS.
Okay.
So I started teaching myself how to do that. So I realized that, oh, wow, actually, this is something creative because I can build a website and I can still use all my creative stuff in it, like color and layout and all of that. So it was really, really exciting. And with the Photoshop, I could edit my pictures and I could create some graphics, you know, typography. So mm-hmm. that was all exciting. And then for some reason, because I had done art and this was pretty much fine art, I used to do a lot of still life drawing. Mm-hmm. So I wasn't really confident that I would be good at the digital side of things. So that's where I took up a degree, a visual communication degree, just to feel confident that what I'm doing is right.
Yeah.
So I did that degree and that gave me that confidence of, that I could be good at designing. So after that now, this was the time where I had to turn that into a business. And that was another ball game altogether. So,
yeah, because you can't just have the skills and rack up the debt from the school. And actually, do you guys have that? Is school really expensive where you're at?
Oh, yes. Oh,
okay.
Yes.
Okay. It's really expensive. Yeah. So you didn't luck out like other people where it's just like free. You got kind of the same deal as the United States where you go to school and you're in debt.
Absolutely.
So now you come to that crossroad where, you know, you got to make all that investment in yourself worthwhile and actually produce something. What did you do?
Right. So what I did now is I started with a basic website. I had a friend of mine who had a whose brother was building a restaurant, an Indian restaurant. So we just started talking, and he said, "Look, my brother needs a website. So I'm really looking for people that can design a website." I said, "Yeah, I can do it for you." Now, when I say that, I wasn't even ready. So that meant I had to go through the hosting and that. But it was a good a process of learning how to put all these things together. Mm-hmm. But I realized that now, look, this is very, very difficult to get these jobs coming in. And I was really in a difficult situation because at that time I had 3 kids.
Oh, wow.
So, wow. Yeah, so it was a very, very difficult time. So, and my wife, she homeschools. Mm-hmm. So I'm the breadwinner, basically. So I had to make it work. So what I did was, I went into my local area and I approached a few companies just to build my portfolio.
Sure.
So I would ask if I could build them a website for free. And I mean, they were shocked. Like, why would you design a website for free? Yeah, but I did. I mean, I did about 5 websites and that built my portfolio. Mm. And then things got really, really hard trying to get the work coming in because the marketing then wasn't as easy as it was, you know, now with the Facebook and...
Right.
Yeah. So what I did was Groupon had just been introduced to the United Kingdom, Groupon. So
I think I remember you telling me about this. Yeah. You had this like group approach to or batch approach to creating websites.
Yes. Yes, absolutely. So at that time, I mean, I'd moved from CSS and I started doing this when I discovered WordPress, but it wasn't really flexible because I like doing the front end side of things. I mean, I'm not really a coder.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
WordPress was really quite basic. So then I discovered Headway, which was quite flexible. I mean, I could design all my pages if I wanted to. It was really good.
They had if I remember correctly, sorry, just for those people who remember this, it's kind of interesting. Headway had a very unique way of designing pages. It was like your entire screen on the back end was taken up with like an iframe, and then you built these little sections in a sort of mock visual builder setting.
Absolutely.
And it was just like, it's kind of back before page builders were really a thing and people were trying to figure out like, how do we make it easy for people to work with columns and rows instead of, you know, short codes. And that was one of the first answers to it, which is kind of interesting.
It was an amazing, amazing product. I mean, then, so I got in touch with, Groupon and I ran an ad. So my websites were around the £2,000 mark for a basic, you know, 6-page website plus 1 year hosting. So I ran the ad with them and they put an 80% discount on that.
Oh,
and
wow.
It was crazy. I had I had more than 200 people sign up for it.
Oh my God.
So
hold on. When you created this ad, I mean, like, were your expectations that you would get a lot of people?
No, not at all. Not at all. I mean, because I just thought, you know what? I'll just create this ad. I'll get a bit of money coming in.
Yeah.
I mean, £200 per website. It's not too bad, you know. And I'll just build a quick template. So this was all in my head. I didn't even realize that it was going to get that big.
Yeah.
So, yeah. So
So wait a second. Did you also, in your ad, promise like a turnaround time that was like really fast? You
Absolutely.
Did. Okay, what was the turnaround time?
1 week.
1 week. So you had 1 week to do 200 websites.
No. 1 week per client.
Oh, okay. So you just put them all end to end?
Yeah. So what I'll do is if the client gets the signs up, I would have a 30-minute interview with them where I get to know what the website is about. We'll write some notes. Mm-hmm. And then we'll just give them a 1 week turnaround.
Oh,
that.
Wow.
Whew. Yeah,
so how'd it go?
That's how it worked. But
that sounds insane.
Yeah, it was insane. So I quickly found out that Headway wasn't really working for us because there was more to do in there. Because with Headway, you had to go in and do specific edits. Mm-hmm. So that took a lot of time. And that's when I came across Divi. So with Divi, I could just create, you know, these pages fast. And and the layout and the way it worked was, you know, way much better because I didn't need to worry about the padding. I didn't need to worry about any of that. I'll just go in, create my page, boom, 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 done.
Yeah.
But
and you had the Divi library too, which you just correct. Save things, and then all of a sudden you've got, you know, so when you say you have a template site, you have a template site. You don't just exactly. have a version that you copy each time. Yeah.
Exactly. So I did, you know, as much of those websites as possible. But to be honest, I mean, that sort of like took the passion of designing websites away from me, because I had to deal with so many people that were pretty much giving me a headache, you know?
Well, I can like imagine.
They
wanted a cheap website fast. Those is just exactly. the worst kind of client you can have. And you had 200 of them.
About 200 of them. So.
Oh my gosh. I'm sure everybody who's done this for a living listening in is like, nope, never. I would never do that.
Don't discount your website.
So what happened after that? I mean, I know that after this, you know, you were basically like a Divi ninja, because you did a ton of Divi websites right in a row there. So you got to know Divi quite well. Was that when you decided to do your first Divi e-course? Because I believe that's how we discovered you, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, absolutely. So I thought to myself, right, let me try, because I had a YouTube channel, but I wasn't really taking it serious. But it was just growing without me making a lot of videos, because and most of the feedback from that was, oh, we like the way you teach, we like the way you explain things. So it was mostly positive.
Yeah.
So then I came in with an idea. I said, look, you know what? I might as well try and create a course around this, you know? Mm-hmm. So that's when I first created my Divi course. I think it was Divi 2.5.
Yeah, it was one of the earlier 2.4, 2.5, something like that. And you had done was it Udemy?
Yes.
Udemy, and you'd done like a video course?
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I decided to do the course, and the feedback I got from that was amazing. You know, people loved it. It was very, very positive. So that's how I ended up sort of like transitioning from having a design agency, designing websites, to actually, you know, creating videos, because I preferred
sort of like content as a product type.
Exactly. Type of idea. Exactly. Yeah. So that's how I sort of like transitioned to the videos.
When did, so talk about that transition of videos. Was it just, you know, was getting into video more or less just, I want to create an e-course, therefore I need to learn how to do video? Or did you have some background in video before that?
I didn't have a background in video. But based on my first initial videos that I did, the feedback that I was getting from that was very, very positive in the way that I teach. So it was pretty much me getting a decent microphone and using ScreenFlow. So all my earlier videos, so that was pretty much it. You know, it wasn't me really on the camera. It was just, screen share, and then I'll just edit that out. So I hadn't really like gone onto camera.
Yeah, so I remember the thing that kind of made your stuff stick out at that point was that, you know, in the WordPress space, the typical video that you would see would just be a full screenshot screen capture, and people would be narrating and clicking, and there'd be absolutely no pacing or like zoom in on specific actions and stuff like that. And so it was really hard to follow, because you're literally just looking at someone's desktop while they do something for maybe 20, 30, 40 minutes, even like if it's a really long one. And all of a sudden, you know, your Divi course pops up and you're doing these kind of tight, short videos that explain a lot in a short amount of time. You've got good editing. You've got these zoom ins on your actions that make it easy to follow along. And I think, you know, that caught our eye, and I think that was part of the reason for the success of those. And I'm sure that just goes back to your design background in general, just that kind of eye for aesthetic that you had from your creative background. But that's awesome. I'm like really impressed at that. I didn't know whether or not you had done videos before that, but that was basically your first like video project.
Yeah, absolutely. That was my first video project that I really started working on.
Well, so let's talk about some of the things you've learned in video since then, because it's really dominated your life since then. You did one video project, and then all of a sudden, you know, somewhere down the line, you start emailing with Mitch, our operations director, and then with me, and then we bring you on, and all of a sudden it's all videos all the time. And when you started, we had a YouTube channel of, I think, like 3,000. Uh-huh. We're now, how many subscribers do we have? Like 30,000 plus?
Yeah, I mean,
over 10 million views. I mean, it's ginormous, the difference. And it's happened in just, you know, a year. So yeah,
just over a year.
So it's crazy. Like, the growth is crazy. The amount of content you've created is crazy. And I think when you go through those big periods where you have to produce a lot, you end up learning more than you realize you've learned. You end up learning things that you don't even know you've learned until you start to talk about it. And then you're like, oh yeah, so I've realized that, this is something I do now. And it's so ingrained that you don't really think about it. So I would love to maybe like try to pull some of that out and speak to what people in the community who want to learn or want to get involved in video for their business, why they should do it, and B, how they might want to go about it. So first question, why should somebody pursue video for their business, their clients, or their products?
I mean, first of all, video creates a rapport, because, you know, when you're explaining something and you can see someone and they're explaining it step by step, you know, it creates this rapport, you know, mm-hmm. with your audience, which is very unique, because it's very hard to describe something which is visual in just text format. So this is where video comes in, especially with the stuff that we do. It's WordPress, it's web design, it's visual. So you need to show how you're doing things. So, I mean, anyone that is in this field, I mean, definitely have to go and do some videos. And right now, it's very easy. I mean, right now, the cameras that we're using, right, for example, mm-hmm. it's just a Logitech, inexpensive camera.
It's like $65, shoots 1080p, correct. USB. It's as simple as it comes. Plug it in and you're good.
Absolutely. And also the most important thing is the sound. I mean, if you get mm-hmm. yourself a decent microphone, the people, you know, on the other end that are listening to you, it makes it easier for you to communicate that way, because people listen to these videos with headphones. Mm-hmm. So if the sound is good, you know, you'll get more engagement. So the answer to that really is, because web design is visual, you have to, you know, be showing people, you know, how things are working, because when they see that transition as you're showing things, it makes it mm-hmm. much easier to consume. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, in short, I mean, I guess I totally agree. And I would say, you know, like, it's the old adage, seeing is believing. So like when someone, you know, someone can read an article, or they can read copy that, you know, your advertising copy, or they can read a testimonial, but when they can see your product in action, or your service in action, whatever it is, they can see you in action. And if that thing is impressive, or that thing is desirable, if that's what they want for themselves, then it's almost instantaneously convincing. Like, that's what I want to be able to do. And absolutely. And so I love that you mentioned the sound quality, because a lot of people think, you know, if I just do a video, that's enough. Not really.
Not really.
That might have been true, I don't know, back in, you know, when YouTube was just coming out and people were like, video, it's even possible? And so, like, they'd watch anything. But now, I mean, you've got people who are creating, you know, these multi-million dollar channels out of their, like, YouTube channels out of their house. But they're using pro products. They're using professional tools.
Oh, yes.
And the quality expectation, even of amateur material, is just through the roof. I mean, people really expect high quality production.
Absolutely.
I think maybe this episode we should do something that we haven't done in a while, which is list the gear that we use on the blog. Because I know I used to do that for every podcast. So I don't do it anymore. But I think people in this, because we're talking about video, I think they might like to see it. Maybe you can walk us through the gear that you use to create the videos for our YouTube channel, and kind of tell people what it is, why you recommend it, mm-hmm. and anything along those lines.
Yeah, sure. So for those of you that watch our videos out there, you know the part where I'm on camera, where I'm introducing the video. Now, that is shot using a Sony A6300. I used to use a 5D Mark III, 5D Mark III, and I moved away from that because it was 1080p, and because the room that I use, you know, the lighting isn't very good. It's quite difficult to put, you know, crazy lights around me. So with this small camera, the Sony A6300, it takes in a lot of light, and it's very sharp and it's 4K. So because I record myself, sometimes I could be out of frame a little bit. So I can actually zoom in because our output is 1080p. So I can actually zoom in because the video is 4K and reposition myself.
And still have a 1080p video. That's awesome. And this is just so you used to use a digital SLR, but now you're using a true digital camera that just has a crazy awesome sensor. Right.
Correct. That's right. Yes.
And repeat that name one more time. The Sony
A6300.
And that's a great camera. I've had it on my Amazon wish list for a while. I haven't got it yet, but
awesome.
So let's talk about. So that's your. And we've already mentioned that the webcam is the Logitech C960, I believe.
Yeah, C960.
Yeah, that's an HD. It's a 1080p webcam. That's what you're using right now. It's what I'm not using it at the moment, but that's what I typically use. And that's a great cheap camera to get you started. If you just need 1080p and all you really have to work with is your laptop, I would say get that camera to get started, get the ball rolling.
Absolutely. And also just to mention another very important thing about the Logitech. Now, when you need to go live with like Facebook Live or YouTube Live, this is the camera that you need to use.
Yes.
The Sony A6300 couldn't do that. So this will always
But it requires a special audio or special video card. And so that's the true for every external camera that's not USB. So if it's a USB camera, you're probably good. If it's not a camera that you can get a direct USB video feed to your computer with, then it's not good for stuff like Facebook Live, which is huge because Facebook Live right now is like the thing to do. I mean, we're starting to do a lot more of it and I know it's really boosting our numbers. And so, that's a great consideration.
Yes.
Let's talk about audio hardware.
Right. Audio hardware. I use this microphone, which is a Rode Procaster. Mm-hmm. Very, very good. And I interface this with a Focusrite Scarlett 2i4. Now, this is the, because this microphone is, I don't know if I'm going too technical now. It takes XLR connection.
Yes.
Now, with this connection, there's no way.
So I can probably show people what you're talking about. So see this cable right here? This is an XLR cable, and it's got like a three-prong attachment that goes into the back of the mic here, and it's got a female end that goes a female end that goes right here and a male end that goes into the interface, the focus. And what this does, this is like the same type of mic cable as if you were like at a concert and someone had a microphone.
Yes.
So it's like, this is analog sound, but it's really high quality. It's absolutely light years beyond, like say if you had a USB mic that plugged into your computer, like the Blue Yeti or anything. Those are very respectable mics, but they're nowhere in the neighborhood of the quality you can get with this kind of analog gear. So continue.
Yeah. No, near. So this connects into a Focusrite. Now the reason why you have to connect it to an interface like a Focusrite is because the Focusrite then has an output that connects to your computer via USB. So that's pretty much the audio that connects to it. Now I have an extra piece of gear. It's called a DBX 286S. Now what this does is it has it's a mic preamp and processor. So sometimes because I'm next to the main road, I can cut out some of the loud noises using this interface, and it's quite inexpensive. It's less than $100. So it's something that you can use if you're in a noisy area. So that's the extra gear that I have, but pretty much that's all you need for your audio sound, and you get perfect sound, which is pretty much what you're hearing now. Yeah.
So if you're looking to create screencasts, if you're looking to create Facebook Live, I mean, just two things or three things, technically, a good mic, an interface for that mic, and the webcam. With those three pieces of gear, you could have a seriously high quality professional setup for tutorials, for live streams, for interviews like this, whatever. I mean, that's the essential gear in my mind.
Yeah, absolutely. And there's also something else that that we didn't mention, which is the lights. Now, the lights that I use,
good point.
They're very inexpensive. I got this off of eBay. They're just, you know, your LED lights. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think all three of them were less than $200. They're really bright. So when you do video, I mean, whether it's a webcam or it's the the normal camera. You need good light to really you know, show your face, you know, in a pleasing way. Because, you know, if you shoot in the dark, no matter what camera you have, you know, it's not going to look good.
It's not going to. That's a really good point. I should have thought of that too. I'm so used to doing it that I'm like, oh yeah, the light will take care of itself. But you're absolutely right. I mean, when we travel and I have to do stuff from the road, it's a pain to figure out lighting because you don't always have your lighting gear with you. So you have to go set up by a big bank of windows and get natural light. Yes. So if you're setting up at home or in an office somewhere, having a couple, just two. Most light kits come as three, but just two will get the job done. If you're sitting at a desk and you just need your face lit, so you can, like, for instance, I have a light right here and a light right here, and it just lights my face so that I look like I have natural lighting. And I'm sure you have a very similar setup where you're sitting.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, awesome. So let's recap the essential gear. If you want to do tutorials, live shows, podcasts or video shows, or interviews. So it's just four things. It's your mic, your interface for your mic, your webcam, and your lights. And two lights will do it. Three lights is ideal. So that's four pieces of gear that you could invest in for your business. You can go anywhere from, like, we'll put the gear recommendation, that based on what we use on our blog, and it's an investment, but it's not crazy high. I mean, there are a lot of people who, you know, you'll spend about the same amount on this gear as you would on a computer. But again, just like a computer, you're going to get a long life out of this stuff, probably longer than you would an average computer. And the quality is just going to be insane compared to people who are using the built-in mic and video for their computer or a USB mic or whatever that may be. So.
Oh, yes. I mean, absolutely. So now that we've talked about the gear, I guess we can talk about the software as well.
Sure. Now, that's great.
Yeah. So when it comes to the software side of things, if it's screen capturing, which is what we do when we do the how-to videos, you need ScreenFlow if you're on a Mac. If you're on a PC, it's Camtasia Studio. Mm-hmm. So it does pretty much the same job.
Yeah, exactly.
And then your audio. If it's not live and you want to take your audio to the next level, you can use something like Adobe Audition. So what you do is you take your recording, you put it in Adobe Audition, and then you normalize the audio just to make sure that everything is all like sounding at the same sort of level. And then you can also add some EQ, which is the equalization, to maybe add a bit of bass or a bit of treble, just to make it sound much better. Mm-hmm. And then you export that audio and put it back into ScreenFlow and replace the audio that you would have, you know, that you would have exported. So that just gives you that richer sound when you do the final video.
And that'll be something that people recognize. You know, if you've ever listened to a podcast episode where one person has like headphone mics or a different kind of mic than what we're talking about here, you'll notice that the sound quality of my mic is usually much, much better than the other one. And both of them have been edited for audio quality, but the information that you can pull from a mic like this and with the correct processor, the interface rather, that has like preamps and stuff in it, is just so much more. And so that software on your computer can actually pull a super rich sound out of that, as opposed to what it's getting from the other gear.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And when it comes to the video now, like in our case, the video where I'm introducing, the part where I'm introducing the video, mm-hmm. and the outro, I use Adobe Premiere for that, but you can use Final Cut Pro. There's a lot of programs that you can use.
Yeah, yeah.
But the main reason why you want to use that is because when you do your editing, you want to do a bit of color grading as well, just to make it look nice. So it sounds like it's a lot of steps, but to be honest, I mean, it's really worth it because, as you mentioned earlier on, Nathan, the quality bar has increased now on YouTube, that if you put a video that doesn't really look good or a video that doesn't have really good sound, people just won't subscribe. And that's just how, you know, things have been now on YouTube.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's essential. And Facebook is becoming just as big a destination for video. Like when people are scrolling through their feeds, you know, video gets crazy engagement, and Facebook goes out of its way to promote people's content in their friends and followers' news feeds who are doing video, whether that's pre-recorded videos that they upload or live videos that they're streaming that moment. So making sure that you have the kind of quality that people want to stop what they're doing to check out is huge. And this is the kind of gear. And by the way, this is not the most expensive gear either. This is budget professional gear. Like this is gear that is very high quality, but at a very affordable price point for, I think anybody with a small business who wants to promote it online could probably afford this gear if they're looking at it as an investment for their business.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And if you do the videos in consistently, I mean, it'll pay for itself in a very short space.
Exactly. And if you're like, just to give people a comparison, I mean, like the light kit that I think we got is maybe a couple $100. The light kit that I would have been working with back in my TV days would have been like a couple $1,000 for just two or three lights. So there's a huge difference in what can be gotten on the professional spectrum, but these are going to get you professional. The stuff we're going to list is going to give you professional quality at what I think is an extremely affordable price. So,
absolutely.
Yeah. So we're always looking to do that for everybody too. So, I think our audience, Elegant Themes people love a good deal. They love that lifetime membership. they love the freebies. So I got to make sure that they know that we're looking out for that too.
Yes.
So just to recap real quick, you mentioned a few programs for people editing, and doing screen capture. So for screen capture on Mac, just to repeat, that's ScreenFlow. Screen capture on PC, it's Camtasia. And for editing, you can do editing in both of those softwares, but for kind of the higher end editing, we recommend the Adobe Creative Suite, which has Adobe Premiere and Adobe Audition. So Premiere is where you'll do your video and editing, and you have some features for color grading, and your audio is done in Adobe Audition. And I want to mention something. I'm almost positive you do this as well, but the ability to create actions and presets in those programs is huge. So like once you figure out what looks good and what sounds good, you can actually save those settings so that when you pull a new file in, all you have to do is click like a couple buttons, and all of a sudden all that work that you saved as actions is done for you. So like if you have the same recording setup, you can literally cut something that would take 20 minutes down to like a few seconds because you're just automating it. And when you're doing a video a day, that kind of stuff is huge.
Oh, absolutely. And that's the secret right there.
Yeah, absolutely. And it sounds like with all this gear and all this software, it sounds like it could be a lot of work. And it can be at times, but I think what most people would realize is that if they figure out what kind of videos work well for them, the first couple times that they try, it'll take forever. So anecdote, the first episode of Divination took me like 2 weeks to create. I'm not even kidding. Yeah. And it was just because I was really, I was experimenting. We had multiple segments. And so I was just kind of lost, you know, all the software. I'd been out of video work for a little while. I'd been doing blogging. And so I had to kind of refamiliarize myself. Everything had been updated. Everything had changed. And I was coming at it with a rough idea of what I wanted, but I was a little rusty. And so it just took me a while to kind of get my bearings. But now, after having done 60 episodes and over a long period of time, over like 2 years, but if you did one a day, you'd get the same familiarity if you did it like short video every day for 60 days. What you'll find is that something that would take you like 2 weeks would actually start taking you like an hour or two.
Absolutely.
That's not an exaggeration. I actually do most of these podcasts in a couple hours a week. So.
No, that's absolutely right. Absolutely right.
So let's talk about, are there any tips or anything that surprised you about surprise lessons that you learned in terms of what makes videos work online? So we just talked about production tips or gear tips. Now let's talk about like when it comes to actually the performance of those videos on YouTube or on Facebook, What are some of the things that you've learned that work and some things you've learned that don't work?
Yeah, I mean, what I've noticed is, years of doing video, if you create a video that is not, that does not show the steps, or that does not articulate what you're trying to do, you'll find that that video will get a lot of thumbs down, and you'll get a lot of people, you know, saying all these crazy things, bad things, even, you know.
So what's like an example of that, if you don't mind?
Okay, like let's say, for example, you're trying to show someone how to create a web page, and you're jumping steps, you're not really showing, and you're doing more of the talking and not the steps. You'll find that people get quite upset with that, and you can even get like bad.
Yeah.
So the most important thing is to just get to the point, because the attention span of people, you know, online is very short. So
yeah,
you don't want to take a long time trying to explain something that takes a few seconds to explain, because that's a waste of time. And you'll find that people always complain about that. Why didn't you just say this, you know?
Yeah, so, I think that's a good thing, because I remember a while back, you know, we were like, we went through this whole process of every time we did a video, we would have an intro, but they were sneaking up on us and getting too long. And people were like, just get to the tutorial. So we literally ended up switching our format from like having like a 30, 40 second intro to like a 5 to 10 second intro, where it's just like, hey, this is what we're doing in this video. And then like, boom, like right into it. And exactly. The performance of those videos shot up. Like people were like, sweet, thank you. Like I literally just wanted to see exactly the information that I wanted, and correct, literally nothing else, because I don't have time for it.
Exactly. So that's, you know, those are the videos that are very, very successful. Get to the point, because that's what people want to know. The moment you start going into going on and on and on and trying to explain things, you know, people get agitated.
So avoid tangents and long introductions at all costs. Get straight to the point. And be very descriptive,
if
I'm understanding it correctly.
And now with YouTube changing the algorithms, in fact, you know, they've changed the way popular videos show up and related videos. If your video has high engagement, it also helps your channel grow.
Mm-hmm.
So
they'll promote you basically by putting you in the sidebar of other people and recommending your videos and stuff like that. Yeah,
correct. So it always, you know, it's a positive thing that you create videos that are engaging, even if it's 20 minutes long.
Yeah.
As long as it's engaging and it's straight to the point and you're showing people and it's all, you know, it's all going in stages, you'll find that that video will perform really, really well. So that's
a good point. I think there's a misconception that web videos have to be super short. It's definitely not true. I think we found that the key is usefulness and a ruthless cutting out of fluff. The idea that, you know, like you're saying, get straight to the point and make every minute of your video useful. And if it's 20 minutes of really useful material, people will stay tuned in for 20 minutes. But if it's 2 minutes of useful material in a 10-minute video, you're going to lose people right away. And you're going to,
And that could even damage your channel. I mean, your videos would, absolutely.
That's a really good point. So, you've got a ton of experience on YouTube. What are some of the other tips that you've learned? You know, you've been really growing our YouTube channel with these videos. What kind of things outside of the video content and production have you learned works for boosting that engagement?
Oh, yeah, sure. There's quite a few things. So one of the most important ones is your thumbnail, right? It's more like branding.
Yeah.
Your thumbnails have to be consistent. So let's say you've produced a video which is very engaging, right? People love it. Now, if you have quite a few videos on the suggested bar, they need to have some sort of unique way of being related to each other.
Mm-hmm.
For the viewer to find the following video or the next videos by your channel easier in the related videos.
So what kind of thumbnails have you found work best?
I would say the ones where you have your face on it and nice text that explains what that video is about. So before even someone clicks, so let's say people are searching and the search results come with a bunch of videos with thumbnails. If yours stands out with a very good description of what the video is about, mm-hmm. you'll find that people will click on that more.
Ah,
So the thumbnail is very, very important. And having those thumbnails be uniform in the same in the sense that, you know, if you group them all together, people can see that.
Very obviously the same style of design and stuff like that.
Correct. So if people, let's say, for example, in our case, really love the elegant themes videos, they can easily spot them in the related videos. So thumbnails are very, very, very important.
And what's great about thumbnails, especially on platforms like YouTube, is you can change them anytime you want without changing your the underlying content.
Yes, yes. So you can actually go back,
Yeah, so if you go through a rebranding where, you know, your basic aesthetic of your brand changes, you can create a new, like a template. And I think this is another good thing to mention is, you know, when you're creating these thumbnails, the easiest way to keep consistency is to use the same template over and over again. Like create a PSD that has multiple layers. If you want to, you know, take a different shot of yourself out of that video and put it in there, that's fine. Obviously you'll want to change the text and some of the elements, but using the exact same template with the exact same design elements for your brand is the easiest way to do that over and over again. And it really cuts down on the time if you're not trying to design something new, but in the same flavor every time you create a video. You know, you can do that. It'll take a long time, or you can create a PSD template and just swap elements in and out, and it take you like 5 minutes or less. So.
Yeah, absolutely. And the second thing is your keywords, right?
Yeah, so, yeah. This is really important. So we want to harp on this a little bit. Talk about, make sure people know what keywords are for video and why they're important.
Yes. So just like your normal search, when people are searching on YouTube, because YouTube is now a search engine, I mean, the second largest search engine. So if someone is searching for how to design a website or how to use the text module, for example, and it's that specific.
Yeah.
That whole keyword needs to be in the description, and it also needs to be in the video tags. Without that, YouTube has no way of finding that video that has, you know, that keyword. Mm-hmm. So it's very, very important to make sure that you have the keywords that are related to the video that you're creating. Otherwise, you can't be found.
So that's
the most important thing. I mean, when you create those videos, you need to find related keywords that you add in your video description and also in the video tags.
So people are probably used to the idea of optimizing their written content for Google, and they use tools like Yoast SEO on WordPress to optimize their content for specific keywords or key phrases. And when it comes to keyword research, there's a lot of stuff out there for Google, and we know Google owns YouTube, but like you said, YouTube itself is its own search engine. Are there any tools out there that people can use specifically for keyword research on YouTube?
Absolutely. So there's two very popular ones. One, the first one is vidIQ. Very, very good. Highly recommended. I mean, it will actually show you when is the best time to publish your video. It has bunch of stats. You know, it has a lot of things in there. And yeah, the main thing obviously is the keyword research. It will tell you how competitive that keyword is and if it has a demand or no demand. Mm. So vidIQ is definitely, you know, a must if you're creating videos on YouTube.
Wow. That's
awesome. The second one is called TubeBuddy.
TubeBuddy. Right? Interesting.
TubeBuddy.
I've never heard of this one.
Yes. It does pretty much the same thing. I mean, I use both of them, but now I'm leaning more towards TubeBuddy.
Oh, wow.
Because there's a feature in there where if you put your main keyword, it will show you the related keywords as well. So that's actually a very, very good thing. So you can see what people are typing. So let's say you type in how to design a website.
Yeah.
And that keyword is very, very super competitive. And it is. So you could say, okay, what else are people typing in there? So it shows you, okay, how to design a website using Divi. And it's less competitive. So that's how you get to see other keywords that you can actually rank for.
Related, so less competitive, but more niche. So you can find those sweet spots where you're still kind of on the long tail of a very high volume keyword that's competitive, but you're using something just specific enough for your niche to rank and to profit.
Absolutely. And it also has a meter that shows you if the keyword that you're ranking for is super competitive or it's good or it's bad. So, I mean, it's really, it gives like a scale.
Yeah. That's awesome. And do these tools give you tips or recommendations on how to optimize your video posting for the YouTube search engine?
Yeah, it does. It actually gives you a score.
What are some of those things?
What it does, it has a list of things on the site, which if you do them, you have to go and tick, you know, each one of them that you've done it. So, for example, it would say keyword in the description, tick. Keyword in the video tags, tick. And
what about in the title? Is it really important in the title?
Yeah. It's very important. Yeah, in the title, tick. So it gives you, you know, like a checklist of things that you need to do for each video, and also examples from popular YouTubers as well.
Wow, that's awesome. So YouTube Buddy and vidIQ for anybody who's interested in really taking their keyword game from Google to YouTube and getting the most out of their video. I would imagine, and I know this to be true, but I just to reiterate, if you've been convinced that SEO is important in general, better believe it's just as important.
Oh, absolutely.
When it comes to video, not even though you're not doing primarily text, you know, they still have those keywords and they're still very, very important for getting your content found, consumed, and then obviously for you benefiting from that traffic. So
absolutely.
Well, hey, we're knocking on the door of just about an hour on this call. I think there's going to be a little bit that we cut off towards the front before we started officially recording, but it's probably time to wrap it up. I think you've probably given us way more than the average person can absorb in 1 hour or in one sitting. So I think having the quick list in the blog post is going to be great. But I just want to thank you so much, Mac, for sharing the things that you've learned on the job with me, with us, with our team, and with our community. So thank you for coming on the show.
No, I mean, thank you for having me. It's always great working with a great team and obviously sharing, you know, my experience and my workflow on a day-to-day basis, you know, so our audience could get to know what is done behind the scenes in order for us to, you know, bring out these videos that we produce for our blogs. So thanks for having me. I really appreciate it.
Well, that's all for this episode of Divi Nation. Thanks for tuning in, everybody. I just want to give another big thank you to our guest, Augustine Mack, for coming on the show. If you have any questions about what we discussed in today's episode, please feel free to leave them in the comments section on the Elegant Themes blog, and we will be sure to respond. Thanks again for tuning in. I look forward to seeing you all around the community. And as always, I'll be back right here next week with another episode of Divi Nation.